Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
This is Full Change with Tom Laidlaw.
I'm sitting here and I heard the bang and like... Did your house shake?
Our whole house shook. Yeah, absolutely. We just had an earthquake in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut area. It was pretty cool. A lot of shake. It felt like a big truck going by.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's what I thought. No, because again, my place was not shaking. I went outside. Like, there's no trees or swaying or anything like that. So, wow.
No. Yeah, we felt it. We felt the whole house rumble, and it was longer than a truck going by. It felt like almost 45 seconds of just literally house.
Is that the first one you've been in?
No. There was one in, I think it was 2011, and I think that was in Toronto, right? And then, or Ontario.
Oh, yeah.
But I was on the 40th floor of the building at Nickelodeon, and the whole building just wobbled.
Oh,
and I was like,
well,
I'm out of here. I got on the elevator, I went down, I ran to the Port Authority, got on the bus, and went home at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I was like, I'm not staying in New York.
And I've been in a couple of them. There was another one here in New York, well, a long time ago. And then we were one in California, and they're different too. Like the California ones are kind of rolling a little bit more.
Yeah.
And the New York ones were banging. Yeah.
There was a New York one that was at like 4 a.m. Maybe you remember that one. That was in the late 90s. Everything just kind of shook like violently, but not like the California ones.
Yeah.
That's the exciting news today. We just had an earthquake in New York City.
There's earthquakes. Something's going on. There's earthquakes all over the place. One in Taiwan.
Yeah, but there always are. You just don't hear about them, you know? Unless they're.
There's something going on.
You think so?
Wow,
you're the conspiracy guy. Okay, let's get into it. Why?
You know what? I just don't believe anything anymore. I just don't believe Fed face value. I just think that there's always, you have to assume that there's something going on.
Well, I'm certainly with you on that one, for sure. I don't.
Okay, so what's going on then? The government has figured out a way to create earthquakes to make it seem like there's the world's falling apart. Now the government's going to come in and save the day, and more. Now we're going to have to be.
I don't think that's the case in this one, but I do like the way you're going with this, Tom. I like that you're opening up your right to...
Like, I really think the government has learned how to control the weather as well.
I think they definitely have. I mean, you can look up documents where they have. Yeah. I think they've patented cloud seeding. So, I mean,
oh, really? Oh,
something.
Wow.
Yeah. So these are not just conspiracies a lot of times.
Wow.
So who knows? But I don't know. We have an eclipse coming up next week, so...
I know.
Interesting times here.
I know. Jeez. The eclipse... And you can't, you're not supposed to look at the eclipse, are you?
There was one 7 years ago. Did you look? I looked.
I don't get the whole big thrill of an eclipse anyways. It's the moon passing over the sun.
The lighting gets really cool. That's about it. Like, it gets like the sky turns almost like a purplish, pinkish, weird, but that's it.
And isn't it like at 11 o'clock in the morning it's happening?
I think 3:15 here in our area, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut area. Okay. So yeah, should be exciting. We'll be out there. Kids are right out of school. They're all making a big deal about it.
I just see the kids making a big thing. And they're all predicting there's going to be traffic jams and everything like that. Prepare,
All I think of is Y2K.
I know, right? Remember that?
Oh, my God. Such hype. And the world's going to end. I was in Canada for that, actually, in Montreal.
You know the other one now, they talk about global warming, and it's like the ozone layer had a big hole in it. We don't even talk about that.
No, that's we forgot about that. Well, acid rain is gone, too.
So. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
And without it, you know, I don't think a political thing, or maybe it is somewhat, but it's just a money thing. Like, there's a lot of money to be made when you're preventing acid rain, or when you're Y2K proofing, or when you're, you know,
like
global
weather channel makes more money than advertising, right? Because they got more eyeballs.
Completely, of course. you see those people whenever there's a storm, they're right out there. Look, this is the worst storm. Yeah.
Yes. And now they call it like a solar, like they give names for it, for this
superstar. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Well, I remember my folks moved to South Carolina about 20 years ago, and we've got more hurricanes in New York than they have in those 20 years.
Oh.
I think we have three, they have two maybe. So it's like, it's all hype. Yeah, I know. And, you know, they moved down there, they have all these, they have these aluminum shutters that you put on all your windows.
Right.
Like, they've been in the garage since they bought the house 20 years ago. They've never taken them out. So it's like, you don't. It's
same. I bought a generator after Sandy. Never used it. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. So you just, it's hype. I mean, I guess it's good to be prepared, but how much won't be made in hype?
Got a big event going on tomorrow.
What's that one?
Special hockey at Rye Playland. So they got a buddy of mine that follows us. I was putting it on. I got a charity game going on at some BDC. I'm dropping the puck.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Pretty cool. Yeah, it's for all the kids with autism and other mental health issues.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah, it's a great cause. Yeah, they're great. They're fun kids to be around because they're just total honesty. There's no playing with them. Yeah.
Our buddy Randy Velichek just did one of those in New Jersey last week, too.
Oh.
And it's just a great event. It's great for the kids. Yeah. They have the big smiles, you know?
Yeah. Oh, they're into it, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they, you know what? They sometimes they're impressed about the NHL, but most times they could care less. Right?
They could care less. Yeah. Who cares? Yeah. I mean, really, think about it.
Yeah, and their whole scheme of life. It's like,
yeah, well, everyone's scheme of life. Oh, speaking of, I'll tell that story too. I was at the Garden recently.
I saw that. I saw you posted that. Yes,
with a friend. We saw a friend of ours, Stefan Metto. He had a suite for his charity.
Oh, nice.
And, yeah, and of course my picture that adorns the walls came up again. And I point out to him, I said, you may have scored the biggest goal in Ranger history, but you don't have your picture on the wall as a child. So
that's right.
He was into it for about 4 seconds, and then he's like, oh, that's cool. So kind of like you.
He's got that way about it, too. Like, he's really, like, got that dry humor. You really pay attention to him.
He's really sneaky funny.
Yeah.
Like, he's, I was at a party with him, and I was talking about how, like, my wife's gluten-free, and I'm a vegetarian. I'm like, yeah, he goes, you know, I try not to be a pain in the ass. He's like, well, you're doing a terrible job. Like, oh. Okay.
We're in Vegas. And there's a whole bunch of us getting on the elevator at the Sphere. And I think it was at the Sphere. Yeah, I think it was. And a couple of Ranger fans went to get on. You could tell they were like really nervous and everything because we're all standing there. There's Adam Graves and Steph going a little bit. I think Richter was there as well. And the elevator got crowded. So Steph says to the guy and the woman, so you're going to have to get off. And the guy thought he was being serious. So he was like, you could tell he was really nervous. He thought he'd insulted us some. And he went to step off, and Stem grabbed him, pulled him back in. It's pretty funny. Yeah.
It's like a guy I messed with. Yeah, he's like very sneaky, funny. Aside from Stefan Metto admiring my picture on the wall and that wonderful 4 second conversation we had about it, the Garden was like old time hockey, the Ranger Devil game. It was awesome.
Oh, I know, right? So hold on, real quick. So you think this is a hockey thing? Because you and I had conversations about 4 minutes long at the most. And so you think it's a hockey thing where guys just can't talk very long?
Oh, yeah. Well, you guys are all narcissistic egomaniacs. So it's, you know, it's hard for you to talk to common folk, you know, unless you need something from them. Otherwise, why would you bother? You know,
it's funny because sometimes I can talk for hours, but when I don't know what it is, we get on the phone with business or something. It's like, get to the point.
Yeah. That's how, like, the whole, if this video of it, it probably took about, it was probably about 30 seconds of video of the whole conversation. The one of the guys, this guy, Eric Price, nice guy, TV exec guy, was like, oh, that's so cool. That's such a cool story. He's like, this is amazing. And Matt was like, yeah.
Okay. It was done by,
So that's it.
And I gave the, oh man, that's a whole school. You know what I love too? Both coaches are trying to blame the other guy. And both coaches are in control of their lineup. So Disney, his line is a starting lineup.
It's first. So,
right. So he puts his tough guy on the ice. And of course they're going to.
It's funny. One of the bitter Devil fans that I coach with, Brian Strack, was like texting and just like, yo, the Rangers put that lineup out there. And I was like, the visitors put the lineup out first.
Yeah.
You know, so it's everybody knew it was coming.
Yeah. That's why the coaches do that. Remember Tortorella did that when they had a big brawl.
Yeah. 2012, I think.
Yeah. He's yelling at the other coach. Like, he's outraged. Like,
exactly. Well, Laviolette was yelling at Travis Green. Travis Green was like, I don't know why Pete was yelling at me. But it was great. I'm not a huge fan of fighting anymore, but it was really exciting.
Let's go there. So, like I say, so the Garden crowd, you were there. Everybody got on their feet, right?
They loved it. Oh, my God, they loved it.
That's the thing. So you kind of wonder, okay, is the league going to want to have fighting come back into the game? I don't think they will because of the TV revenue, because that's the problem, right? Because now people that don't want to watch fighting are sitting there at the clicker, and they push the button and go someplace else. Right?
Yeah, but, you know, they say that in the concussion thing, but that was all over social media.
Yeah.
It was all over everywhere. I produce a science podcast with a host named Joe Hansen. He's in Texas. He's a PhD, brilliant guy. He's got a huge following.
Just like me, right?
Exactly like you, PhD, yes, engineer. And he sent me an email and said, hey, so explain what happened in the Ranger Devil game to me.
Oh.
And I was like, wow, this is pretty cool because it's, you know, he's a non-hockey fan. And right. It's like, this is everywhere, you know, right. So.
I think as long as it just happens once in a while.
Right, exactly.
Okay. Yeah, because we start getting back from where it was in the 70s and 80s. And it's just,
Yeah, and stage fights are kind of stupid, but this one, I don't know, there's just a lot of electricity.
So Garden really loved it. You consider that a stage fight?
Yeah, absolutely. It was 2 seconds in.
Yeah,
but it was Rempe and McDermott. It was, and Goodrow went right after ball.
So you think that everybody was out there talking to each other, saying, "We're going, you're
we're going. Yeah, we're going." Oh, Rempe and McDermott for sure. But if you watch, Goodrow took the faceoff and he beelined for ball.
Right.
And then Keandre Miller, poor John Marino, got tied up with Keandre Miller. Yeah. Keandre kind of ragdolled him a little bit, but
Miller was funny laughing in the family box there too. They had the camera on.
Yeah, I know you'd like this because what he did was after the fight, he gave him the "You're too short" sign.
Oh, did he?
And you as a height bully would probably be like, see, that's one of us, guys.
And I like Remke coming off the ice, too, when he got ejected. He's getting
Did he change his name?
Yeah, I did.
It's Remke now?
Yeah. What is it?
Rempe.
Rempe. Oh, he changed it.
He changed it back.
You know what? That's one of my skills.
I know it. But yeah, he's
not shout off his laughter in the AI, I get all messed up all the time.
Oh, you get a few. But he had his bloody hand, and he was like waving to the crowd. Yeah, it was... People loved it. And it was just bizarre to see all like eight guys just get shuffled off the ice.
Yeah.
Because
the players like Cooper and Miller, so now you got to go with four defensemen the rest of the night.
Yeah. And the rule is if you get into a secondary fight, you're ejected. And right. So they determined that the VC fight was the primary fight. Yeah. I don't know how they determined that. And
yeah, he was first to drop his gloves. They showed the replay. He was first.
Oh, they did. Okay. Yeah. And then everybody else just got tossed. And it was just weird. It was like the bench was tiny, but it was a good game. They came back.
I love that. We had the big brawl against the Kings in 1981. I was a rookie. And Barry Beck, Chris Katsopoulos, Eddie Hosmer, the defense, all got booted. Thrasher hadn't been playing forward, so he had to come back, and we played with four defensemen. And then Dave Maloney got hurt.
Wow.
Three defensemen.
So he played three. Who was the third? You, Gresham?
Daryl Vadney, myself, and Gresham.
Wow.
Yeah, and Gresham and Vad weren't, it's like, I wasn't a bad skater, but I certainly wasn't rare roots later like that. But Rick Chartrand was on the ice, and I was cocky back then.
Tough player.
So I took him wide, drove to the net, knocked the goalie down, and Duguay shot in the empty net. Typical Tom Laidlaw play. It was not a skill play at all. Just ran over somebody.
Take that. There you go.
Oh, funny.
But yeah, but this was a class. So I think I think the league is probably like, oh, they don't like it, but at the same time, you're like, well, look at the ratings. Yeah. I mean, look at the buzz. You know,
right. Again, everybody was talking. Yeah, it's surprising. It happened? It's been years since we had one, right? It's been a few years.
Since 2012 was the Ranger Devil one. So right. Yeah, so it's 12 years.
They had one when Tortorella was coaching in Vancouver. They had a bench clear ball against Calgary, I think.
Well, no bench clearers. They can't do that.
I'm sure. Line ball. Yeah.
Right. Because then someone had told us because they lost a TV contract with CBS back in the 80s because they had maybe it was the Rangers Kings.
It might have been, yeah.
They had that brawl and they said, no, this is stupid. And it does look, the line brawl is different. It's five guys out there. Bench clearing brawl just looks like chaos.
I mean, what's that bench clearing brawl now? It's just a bunch of animals out there.
It's crazy.
Oh,
it's so bizarre. But yeah.
Especially when Nicky Fagioli comes out of the stands there and starts ragdolling some guy in
white suit. But yeah, that was. That was just a throwback game. And then the Rangers held on. They got a little sloppy in the second, and they won the game. So
I think they're back to having that character team again. Like last year's playoffs, for some reason, the character got away. I think they're back now to being more of that gritty team, fighting back, playing physical.
I tend to agree with what you said. I think that they, in the few years ago, or is it three now, they brought in Frank Vetrano and Andrew Kopp, and they fit in really well. And they were character guys. They weren't like leaders. I think people were looking too much towards Kane and Tarasenko to kind of be the guys that put them over the top last year and just kind of mess with the chemistry.
Like, it changes the whole chemistry. Like, for a guy like Kane, like, as far as the U.S. guys, one of the best U.S. players ever played.
Absolutely.
So he walks in that locker room and he's on the ice. It's like, okay, they're going to defer to him now because of that. And, you know, somebody now that had top 6 minutes are now going to, there's two guys are going to lose those top 6 minutes. So it's really, really shook up the team a lot.
You know, one?
Yeah.
Yep. No, go ahead.
No, hopefully. Because again, you go back 2 years ago into the playoffs, they were a character team. You know,
yeah.
Remember them. Remember as Lindgren got hurt. He came back and still.
Oh, yeah.
Came back. I think it really picked everybody else up. Said, listen, if he can play as much as he's hurt, then we sure.
Absolutely. You know, you had Lafreniere was fighting Stamkos in the one game, and you had like some things going on. I just want to take it back full circle because one of the big things is, you know, Kane is not there. Now Lafreniere got bumped, but Lafreniere is playing now. He's coming. He looks like he's going to be a star.
Yeah.
And talking to Stefan Matteau, he's like, you know what it is? He said, Laviolette lets him make mistakes this year. And he said, none of the coaches did that. Like, they made mistakes. There was too much pressure. And he also said Panarin gives him the puck, which is which definitely helps because Panarin's phenomenal.
Right. And it all snowballs, too, because now people see, the teammates see that he's playing better, so now they want to get him the puck more. So,
yeah, he may hit 30 goals this year. And again, it's like the ability to be able to make mistakes and not, you know, wilt from it is definitely a huge teaching tool because you can grow from that, you know? And let's see. Razor or wagon. Let's see what happens, man. It's getting close. Getting close to crunch time. Maybe you'll stay for a whole game.
That's
a star, Jackie. I don't mean that. He stays for the whole game and he takes notes.
We can watch the replays. Yeah.
There you go. Oh, great show coming up now. We're going to have a guest that you played against. And, well, you bumped into him a few times, and you got to like the start, Jeff Chychrun.
I was excited when you told me you got him. One of those guys I've always looked at. I thought, man, he's like I just like the way, much as he was terrible in Gus Eskis, he was all fighting and everything, but just he had that character, seemed like a real good team player. Yeah. So I've always really admired him. So looking forward to talking to him. We haven't met before. I think we've touched base on Facebook a couple times, but really just seems like a great guy.
Then here we go. Hey, Tom, we got a great one today. We have a big defenseman, bigger than you, fought everybody, came up with Flyer. He's a good defenseman himself, and now his son is a stud defenseman. Today we have Jeff Chychrun.
Look who is here, Mr. Chychrun. What's happening?
I was wondering what time our 11 o'clock meeting was at. How are you, bud?
You're good. Good to see you again. You look great, bud. Really.
So do you.
Thank you.
You put us all to shame over these years, though, with your workout videos. And
well, I didn't know you could work out when I was playing the NHL, so I figured I'd work out now.
We're all a little guilty of that from time to time.
Isn't that true?
Please don't tell him that, though. His head is big enough as it is, man. And sorry for we're late. We just had an earthquake, so we were a little scrambly. But
my wife's a Huntington native, and her girlfriends were all writing her saying it's crazy what's gone on there.
Wow.
Shaking, you guys okay?
It was shaking a little bit. I hear it didn't really shake that much. It's more the noise. We live close to an airport, and I thought it was a plane going over. And I got a bunch of messages, too. Where do you live, Jeff?
I'm in Boca Raton, Florida.
Nice.
Ottawa. Yeah, I grew up in Ottawa. My kids are both there now. My daughter moved there a few years ago. Jacob's there.
Who knows? That's right.
We go up in the summer. We're there all summer, and my wife just stopped going to the office. We're kind of enjoying.
Cool.
And I don't think you guys played together. I think you missed each other in LA, right?
Yeah, we missed each other. Sorry, you were in LA after. Yeah,
we had a training camp together. Tommy had to retire at that point, unfortunately.
Yeah, sorry, you came in and took my job, I think is what it was, right?
I didn't last long. I guess I didn't do a good enough job. I had a lot of laughs through the training camp. I had wrist surgery, and I was skating on my own, so kept me going.
That's right, we did have fun, yeah. I was at the end there, too, where I really didn't care. I was like, my back was gone, and training camp was actually probably the most fun training camp I had. So
yeah, right.
That was cool. Hey, I got to ask you, though, so what round were you drafted in?
I was a second-round pick in 84.
Okay, and what round was your son drafted?
He was a first-round pick in 2016, yeah.
Does he remind you of that quite a bit?
He's pretty easy on me, actually.
Oh, really?
Tests me on some things, but yeah. As far as the hockey stuff, I didn't have the puck on my stick a whole lot, so that's what I wanted him to do. So I taught him to love the puck and want that thing in the tough situations. So we're a little different in that regard, for sure.
Yeah. Isn't that true? That's how you and I are the same kind of players, whereas they don't the longer you got the stick, the puck on your stick, the worse. I just get rid of it.
I remember I had Jim Dorey in junior. He was our assistant coach. Really lucky to have him there.
Right.
And he always said things that maybe he was trying to make. He was really good with me because he'd say, if your confidence ever waning, get the puck and at least pick one time a period where you try to go coast to coast sort of thing.
Nice.
But one of the things he said was, the less a defenseman handles a puck, often the better he's known as a puck handler. Kind of struck a chord to me. You're obviously not coughing it up or critical errors where it's all of a sudden outnumbered situation on your goaltender.
Right. That's the same thing. I've told the story many times, but Herb Burke said to me before his first game, he said, Laidlaw, if you get the puck, give it to somebody else. You're not supposed to have it.
That's what not we're paying you to do.
Yeah, exactly. We were playing one game. We're in Washington, I think it was. We're killing a penalty. And I got the puck. All I had to do was shoot it down. But for some reason, I got cocky. And I thought, okay, I'm going to do a little toe drag here. And the guy came at me. I guess I kind of surprised him. So I got around him. And then I shot the puck down. So it was a stupid move. I didn't have to do it. got back to the bench, and I thought it was pretty cool, but got back to the bench, Herb just ripped into me, "You ever done that again, and you're gone."
The guy, keep it simple, stupid thing.
Yeah, yeah, no kidding. So where did you grow up? Where's home?
Yeah, I grew up in Ottawa, Ontario, or a suburb you call it, Nepean. Born in Montreal. We moved to Ottawa, and I was quite young. My mom was from there. My dad's a Saskatchewan native, and he worked at Nortel his whole career. So, yeah, I grew up in Ottawa. It's kind of ironic. Both my kids live there today. Daughter moved there a few years ago, and then Jacob followed last year. But, yeah, still get back there in the summertime, whatever holidays we can, and always loved going home. How about you, Tommy?
Brampton, Ontario.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Farm boy, milking cows.
Is it still farm area where you grew up? Or?
No, they sold it several years ago, but it stayed a farm, and now it's all built up now. So it's.
I see how that the urban sprawl, even in the west end of Ottawa, has.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
So what did your father do for work?
Yeah, he worked for Nortel. Okay. He was an electrical engineer. He was there in 39 years. He left the farm at 18 and ended up at Ottawa U. And met my mom in state, raised all of us there. So.
Very cool. Very cool. Isn't it like, I don't know how you are. Like, I'm in the process of writing a book now. It's really interesting looking back. Cool. Yeah, you look back at your life and what your parents meant to you, the work ethic and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Blessed to have it, right?
Like, yeah.
I mean, I think it's funny, even, you know, I mean, I do some TV for the Panthers, but I watched them thump Jacob and the Sens 6-0 last night. But it's sort of like short memory, right? You got to play again tomorrow night. And, you know, you go through those times and they make you better. But yeah, like the work ethic you get right from my parents. And I feel really lucky now because with him being in Ottawa, he sees Jake 41 nights a year, which is pretty great at 86. Yeah, and for my dad and for them both to share.
Yeah, that's very cool. Yeah. Yeah, to have those memories. I don't know how you were too. I didn't appreciate my father and grandfather as much as I do now. And I kind of, I don't know if I regret it. I treated them great, but I don't think I really expressed to them what they meant to me, because I really didn't know at that point what they meant to me until
You're so right. I see, you know, so we raised our kids in Florida, and I saw the price of things, whether, you know, I don't know, my daughter's piano lessons or obviously my son's travel hockey or ball or whatever we were doing, and look back at my dad. So like I said, again, he worked at Nortel, but there was a point in time where he worked from 8 to 4, come home, have dinner at 5 with all of us, and then he'd head to the National Arts Center downtown Ottawa where he would tend bar at nights. Yeah, and, wow. And he did this for quite some time. Actually, he did it right into my early years in Philly. And I didn't realize till later on that he actually did it so I could play minor hockey. And do all the travel. So really kind of hit close to home when I really thought about it.
Right.
But yeah, really grateful just all their sacrifices.
Have you had a chance to express that to him yet?
Yeah, for sure. He knows. Yeah. Yeah. You know, when I got traded to LA, Tommy, I started writing letters to my parents. It was kind of neat, you know, a little extra time living by myself. And yeah, it was kind of a sort of take note of that and the appreciation.
Yeah.
That's
cool. Yeah, that's cool that you had a chance to tell him that too. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's very cool. When you started playing hockey, were you not a fighter when you started playing hockey at 6 or 7 years old? Were you a talent guy? Were you?
Well, I think I thought I was. I don't know. I think, you know, we all sort of, we do a lot of alumni events down here. We even had Peter Worrell, who was great, big, tough guy.
Yeah.
Played his junior hockey in Hull and just a mountain of a man, big heart. And every time we have an alumni game down here for the Panther veteran last year during the LCA, he scores 3 goals. And so we all have that sort of hidden little talent, I think. But yeah, I don't know. I was always a pretty sort of stay-at-home defenseman, I think. And then when I finally made the Ontario Hockey League, they tried to make me into a power play guy. So I learned a little bit of the skills there. And then even my first year in Philly, they were convinced I was going to run the power play or be on it. Sorry, not run it. We had Mark Howe. We had Murphy, Terry Kirk. We had plenty of guys. But they constantly put me on it, and I never embraced it.
Oh really?
Never comfortable out there at that.
Yeah.
Those times.
Yeah. Isn't that true? Like you know yourself what you are as a player. Yeah. I told the story many times. I was on the All-Star ballot one year. I was like 87 or something. Worst year I had. It was a strange feeling.
Honestly.
Like, oh, yeah. Like I felt confident in my game, But I just felt like I don't fit into an all-star game. I mean, Paul Coffey's going to be there. Wayne Gretzky said, I can't do that. Now I'm kind of mad at myself that I thought like that. But yeah, it's funny.
That was quite a defense you had in New York in those days too, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was watching an old game. We played L.A. in the first round. And back so we had Barry Beck and Eddie Hospedar playing together. Yeah. Myself and Chris Katsopoulos and, you know, Carol Vadden, A.D. Maloney. Gretzky was there. He moved up to forward sometimes because, we just pounded people then too. Poor Marcel Dion didn't get a goal the whole series. Every chance we get, we just hammered him. Yeah.
Yeah. I just have a vivid memory. So, you know, junior hockey, I grew up in Ottawa. So the Ottawa 67s were sort of my NHL.
Right.
And I remember the 67s playing New Westminster in the Memorial Cup. And New West, and they just pounded them. And it was Barry Beck, Mark Lofthouse, who I later played with in Hershey. But
that's right.
Yeah. I remember playing my first preseason game in Madison Square as 85.
Right.
And it was a huge Donnybrook. So Ed Sater coaching against Mike Keenan.
That's right.
And there was a 5-on-5. And then the next shift out, I was sort of the next, and everybody dropped the gloves again. But I remember before my shift, Barry, I didn't know the guys in Philly well yet.
Yeah.
Dave Brown's just calling Barry Beck. Watch it, Beck. I'm going to get you. And I remember looking at Brownie like, stop, man. Beck's going to kill you. Well, they had just a hell of a fight. I had no idea how tough Brownie was.
Well, I remember that brawl, too. I think Bubba had him down behind the net, didn't he, or something?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was Frozy and somebody.
Yeah, that's right. Terry Kleisinger was the goalie. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. That's funny. I just think, watch that brawl recently. Yeah, that was... Remember those games in the preseason? Why did we put a puck out of the ice?
Bananas. Puck's optional.
Yeah.
Hockey optional. Rookie games were just as bad. The guys in Philly, all they wanted to do was see people fight. So that was sort of that was definitely part of the coming out for me, those things, realizing sort of what might be in store.
So who would you play junior for?
Kingston Canadians.
Okay. Yeah. Now, did you start fighting a junior?
I did a little bit. The first year was sort of... feeling my way through it. And I was a tall, probably more of a mommy's boy, So first time away from home and remember I got my nose broke on like game two of preseason. So sort of figured it out or what I had to sort of do a little bit. But then two things happened sort of later on, maybe around December, January. Dave Lowry, who was a teammate of mine for the Nepean Raiders, he actually grew up playing with Eisenman. They were all a year older than me playing in the Nepean. But we played midget together. He challenged me one game in London.
Oh.
And I'm like, what? He's dropping the gloves. Anyway, I one-timed him. I'm like, whoa, geez, I might be like just.
Yeah.
And down went David.
Yeah.
And then about a month later, we were playing in Windsor and I came around the net and I had the stick up around my, remember the old Windsor Arena, they could drop cokes on you from
behind
the net. And the stick was around my face, and I turned around. It was Keith Gretzky, and he was young. He was only 16. No, I was only 17. But anyway, I turned around. I guess I pushed him, and in came Todd Gill, challenged me. And Gill, this was his second. He'd already been drafted by at least had a bit of a reputation. And same thing. I dropped it, and I one time gave him a one shot, and he went down. That didn't happen a lot in my career, but. Sort of those two kind of gave me a little bit of confidence. Right. And then, the year sort of went on and we had a bit of a Donnybrook in Belleville right before we didn't make the playoffs and a 5-on-5 and I ended up pairing off with Craig Cox and Cox, he broke my nose, but I really stood in there. I know there was like three or four NHL heads scouting, maybe GMs in the building in Belleville that night and sort of propelled me a little bit in my draft year, I guess. But anyway, all those things sort of added up to the confidence, right? Young guys, you have like so many things.
Sounds weird to say, but I always liked the way you played. I felt like you were this good guy. Like you really didn't want, like you fought.
Right. That's
your role. But I felt like you and Glenn Cochran are like that. I felt.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I was just talking about him with someone, so sad that he passed away. Yeah. And they talked about how nice a guy he was. And I remember 84 again, my first camp, Cocker was there, Dave Brown, Daryl Stanley, and I was so intimidated like seeing them, like, wow. And we had that old practice rink in Voorhees. Almy, and it was chicken wire, three quarters of the way around, and then nothing.
Man.
This is the NHL.
I know. And isn't it weird? Like, you get the NHL, some of the practice rinks are just dumps, like, in LA, Culver City in LA.
Culver. Terrible. Yeah.
Jeff, did you like fighting? We ask a lot of guys who get into fights. Did you actually, did you enjoy it? Did you hate it?
I think it gave me an air of confidence because I have a nice personality, I think.
Yeah.
My wife may not agree all the time, but yeah, so there was a definite transition, and Paul Holmgren talked to me a lot. So did the Johnnies and Hershey, sort of how I had to raise my emotional level to get to my game face. So there was a progression throughout the year, throughout the day, I'm sorry, from the morning skate to 7 o'clock at night, where I had to sort of transition out of my street personality to the game. And it wasn't always easy. I think it took me a while after I retired. I forced down my spaghetti and chicken a lot of afternoons, and there are a lot of nervous naps. I'm sure you did this, thought the same thing, Tommy, a lot of times. But yeah, the transition from my street personality game personality was difficult. But I was thinking last night as I'm watching the Senators play and they're getting thumped by Florida, they're down 5-0 sort of halfway through the second. I'm like, you know, this was a time where I might have been having a really crappy game, but I could really have one shift where I almost look like not a hero, but you know, I could certainly make a mark in a game by doing something tough. And
that was your reputation. You would play the game fine, and there's no trouble. You could play the game, you're moving puck out of your zone. But if you ever got down by a few goals or up by a few goals, the guy said, "You go, here we go,
could step up."
Tom, I don't want to gloss over though, because Jeff fought everybody. I mean, he fought Koser, Probert, Vakoda, Neely, Wendell Clark, Jay Caulfield, you fought Ken Baumgartner. You fought all the heavyweights.
Yeah, and I don't know about you, Tom. I found fighting guys like Proby would put the fear of God into you.
Sure.
I found Cam Neely really difficult. But the guys I found really tough were sort of almost, I don't want to call them middleweights by any means, but Koser, Wendell Clark, especially Shane Trill, the guys that weren't the tallest.
Sure.
They come at you like bulls and they could throw both hands. I didn't know how. I really struggled to sort of keep them at bay, and you know, because you try to sort of lock them out with one arm, and then they're coming with two, and they're so strong. Yeah. Every time I land up on my ass.
Yeah. How about Ty Domi? Did you fight him?
Just once in preseason, and it was. I can't believe it didn't happen more often. And then my son and Max lived together for 2 years in Arizona. So Ty and I, we spent a couple of Christmases singing carols together and really, really quite. I was at his wedding in New York a few years ago in 2017.
Wow.
I really enjoyed Ty. But what I tell you, I watched a 4-minute video of Ty not long ago, and it was just the ferocity and power of his punches.
And he got the ability to take punches with that blockhead too.
Oh, Ty, I'm telling you, he comes up to you and he pokes me in the chest with two fingers, and I go, "Ty, that hurts." He's so damn strong.
Yeah. And he grew up like fighting in the streets too, didn't he? Isn't that where he learned to fight?
Grew up in Windsor. He used to protect his big brother. You'd tell him, it's his brother's name. Shoot, it's escaping right now. Really nice guy. His brother had a bit of a business acumen, but Ty used to have to protect his big brother all the time.
Is that right? Eh? Is that right?
Yeah.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Now, so were you drafted by the Flyers or were you drafted by somebody else?
I was drafted by the Flyers, yeah. Okay. And almost, you know, I was my last year junior, so it'd be 85, 86. I was still with the team. Maurice used to play almost 10 exhibition games back then. And I was still with the team October 10th. And they decided to send me back. But it was best. I wasn't ready for Mike Keenan at that time, probably. And although, you know, I wish I actually had a chance to play for Mike when I was 24, 25, because I would have maybe been more mature and able to handle it a little bit better, I think. And probably maybe he would have appreciated me a little bit more then too, quite frankly. Right. But yeah, they were a real veteran group. And you know, Mark Howe and McCrimmon, I think, might have been the best tandem in the league. Yeah. And between those two and Brad Marsh and Doug Crossman, they probably played 50 plus minutes a night. And then they had, you know, Eddie Hosabedar and whoever else sort of play in the final 5-6 minutes of the game. And you mentioned Eddie. Eddie was great to me when I was at training camp. We had the same agent, and every year Eddie would drive me around, do whatever. Just the salt of the earth, really. Yeah. Just great personality. And
he was funny. One game, he was with the Flyers, obviously, and they're skating around a warm up, and we're shooting pucks at his feet. You know, and just being smart. And we didn't really think too much of it. He's just still going to play his game on the ice, no matter what we're doing. And Keenan saw this whole thing going on. So I guess after warm up, he went up, you're playing around with your buddies, and they yanked him out. We'd play in the game. Yeah. We're going, thank God, we're going to do that more often.
Right. Pick your guys.
Yeah, totally. Now, you know, I have any credit to, because I think he really intentionally built this nutty reputation, right? Like, he's an intelligent guy, right? So he knows.
He's so successful today.
Yeah.
His brother-in-law, Ernie, has handled finances for me forever. And my wife and their profit sharing from the office. And he takes care of he's just been great, Ernie Sims. But Eddie's brother-in-law, yeah.
Yeah. Eddie's got that little thing sometimes you're talking to him, you're wondering, okay, did he hit the head too many times? Or is I love the guy, too. He's fantastic.
Yeah. Maybe Dana's the smart one in that relationship.
Oh, someone is. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, I got to ask you, we've done about 100 shows, and of those 100 shows, how many guys have been divorced, Tom? I mean, probably 95%.
Oh, yeah, at least, yeah, a huge number.
How about you? Yeah. You've stayed married?
Yeah, 30 years now, 30 years last year. Yeah, I don't know if she puts up with me. Nancy, she's from Long Island, New York. Nancy's roommate from college, Marcy Sorkin, worked in the Flyers and marketing back in 90. So, she was in the wrong place at the right time. At Kaminsky's, we just finished the season, and some of us were going to the World Championships the next day. But found her there and kept in touch, and got married 5 years later.
And nice and romantic when you proposed to her.
I did the one knee thing.
Nice,
Tommy, and we were in Tivoli Gardens in Copenhagen. They have some family friends over, so I followed the family over there one summer, and she's great. She's definitely the keeps me in contact with most of my friends, quite frankly. I haven't been able to organize lunch in 30 years. I've lost that ability because she's our social director.
Isn't that true? Guys are terrible that way, right? You be good friends with some guy you don't see him for 30 years. Yeah.
Yeah. I have some that are pretty good, but I'm brutal.
I know. You see, you keep saying, I'll do it tomorrow.
Yeah,
we got to get together.
I was so grateful you guys reached out to me. Thank you so much.
When I heard you were coming on, I was excited because I really meant it when I said that. You're like that Glenn Cochran kind of guy that was ferocious on the ice, but I heard so many great stories about you.
Great.
Yeah, very cool. All right, so you turned pro then. You played up to 20 and then turned pro after that?
Yep. We didn't have very good teams in Kingston. Last year I played for Fred O'Donnell, another old pro. Freddie played with Orr in the Bruins, and he played in the Hockey League. Then I turned pro in, 86, 87, I guess. And we won the Calder Cup in Hershey in 88. So a few of us made it off that run. We actually swept the playoffs there. Gordon Murphy was on that team. Nick Kyprios was on that team. Wendell Young was our goaltender. So we had some pretty good guys there. Kevin McCarthy went on to coach NHL for a long time.
Yeah.
But yeah, it kind of vaulted us. And it's such a transition to learn and to play pro hockey, right? Yeah. Like, you see how great the NCAA is today. And the number of guys that are coming out of that, it used to be all, like, for us, the big influence was major, junior. And part of that's probably why my son had decided to go to Sarnia. But it's different. Like, the NCAA, they play twice a week, maybe a 35-game schedule. So then you turn pro, and man, that schedule, it's 3-4 games a week for 5 months, right? That's a total different animal than playing on Friday and Sunday night. So it's such a transition. And it took me a little while to figure it out, too, even though I played major junior. I thought I was a real student of the game. And then when I turned pro, I realized I was having some struggles in Hershey. I was lucky enough, like I said, the year before I almost made the Flyers. And then at the end of my junior year, they sent me to play in Hershey. We actually played in the finals against Adirondack. And we lost, but really good experience. I thought I was kind of in to make Philly in the fall. And then I did nothing but struggle as a 20-year-old. I think I almost had another growth spurt. But really grateful for those tough times because I think it made me appreciate, but I also got better as a result. Because I sort of look at it like this, Tommy. I always looked at junior as sort of being, we talked about earlier, you could sort of do something in the third period of the team's playing lousy. But I always look at junior as a one-period league. I look at the American Hockey League as like a two-period league. And the National Hockey League, I call it a three-period league because you can't take a shift off because someone's going to beat you. You're going to get exposed. I think you have a lot of guys in the American Hockey League that are maybe more skilled than a lot of guys in the NHL, but
yeah.
There's something they're missing, why they can't play in the top six, or they don't do something quick enough. They don't, you know, if there's scores, they don't get the holes quick enough. There's always something missing, but I think the NHL is truly that three-period, 60-minute game, and that's the challenge for so many teams I find today. They have a tough time playing a full 60 because of the parity, and that's their biggest challenge.
And the difference between winning and losing is a fraction too, right? Like, you know, you're not on your game. If you're not doing all the little things right, then, like I said, you can get exposed, yeah.
Yeah, leads aren't safe. Momentum swings in the league today. It's bananas. Yeah. You know?
So when you think of Mike Keenan, he's changed. I've seen him recently. He's changed. He's a nicer guy and everything like that. So thinking of him as a coach, what's your thoughts when you think of Mike Keenan?
I have to tell you, it was tough as a young player. And maybe I had to learn to be little tougher between the ears too, obviously. But for me, the biggest challenge was there just wasn't enough. You know, you'd get called up from Hershey. Here's what happened to me. I got called up and we played in New Jersey. And I just tell the story that, and I didn't get a shift until 10 minutes left in the third period. He threw me out to kill a penalty. And I just don't think how there was ever an opportunity for me to succeed that night, right? So I remember, was it Sundstrom was playing for the Devils? Came, walked around me. I hauled him down. I was cold and flat-footed, and I took a penalty. Now we're down 5-on-3. They scored. They win the game. So the next day we're in Philly, and, you know, Mike called me in the office and gave it to me, like,
really?
I don't just sit how many minutes you have to be ready to play in this league and blah blah blah. I'm like, I really didn't have a chance to succeed that, like no chance. So and they had a veteran group, like I said earlier, the top four guys played 50 plus minutes, so there wasn't a lot. And I do believe at 22 I would have been able to handle Mike better because I would have been more mature to handle maybe less ice, or and I would have been tough enough to handle what he wanted me to do too. So I think I would have appreciated a more planet for him a little bit older, but it wasn't easy. There's no question about it. He challenged emotionally and physically too. You know, the demands of playing Flyer way weren't easy, but I'd take my hat off. There were Scotty Mellenby played, Derek Smith. So some of the forwards, Smith, Zezel, Tockett, not a lot of young defensemen. Greg Smith played for a little while. We all had mixed success under Mike on the blue line. So you can call it what you want. I think Johnny Stevens played a little bit, but none of us played that long for him on the blue line.
I always thought with him, like Keenan, Babcock, Hitchcock, people say, well, they're successful. Well, they still would have been successful. All this extra stuff was just, it was more of an ego thing. They want to show that they're the master scientists. They're going to push all the right buttons.
Yeah, I think so. I think there was a lot of it. I think, I think there was maybe a bit of it. They wanted to be headliners as well, in my opinion. And, I just don't think that's the way it should be. I think, I see Paul Maurice here, and he's such a great communicator, and he's so great with us as a bit of the media, gives us so much information. But I think he'd be happy if he was on the bench and nobody ever took a picture of him. I mean, he's so always pumping his players up. And I think that's probably why Mo has stayed. And I mean, he was in Carolina forever, and then he was in Winnipeg for almost 8 years. I think that's why he has longevity, because sort of understands where his role is on the bench.
You remember Mike Allison?
Yeah, little bit. Mike coached, did he coach the Senators for a little bit?
No, that was his brother.
Oh, okay.
Well, Mike and I started together in 1980-81, and then we had Herb Burst together for like 4 years. And we did a show here, he talked about publicly, so I feel comfortable in saying this, but he contemplated suicide because of Herb Brooks. And I didn't know that. Mike and I are friends. I had a lot of success under Herb Brooks. I bragged about him all the time, what a great coach he is. So when Mike told me that, I was like, man, he acknowledged too that he was kind of, maybe he was sensitive to things. But for that, to get to that point, and Herb did a lot of stuff that the Mike Keenan kind of guys did too. But again, I was one of Herb's boys, so I played all the time, so I was happy with that. But to hear him say that, to hear Mike Allison say that, that was a shock.
Yeah, different era, right, too. And that's so frustrating. And you have to feel such empathy for people like that, because I know even today, my son's a skilled guy, and we do a lot, we're related by marriage to the Richardson family and Luke and Steph and their foundation for Dare and their daughter who passed. And Jacob likes to do a lot of things for mental health. And even just talking like the daily struggles for a pro athlete today, and Jake's in his eighth year. I mean, he's almost a seasoned, old pro at this point, but he talks about his equipment and skates and sticks and how frustrating that can be, because when they're not right, you just can't perform, and just the mental strife that goes on. And if compounding that, you've got some guy standing behind who's constantly berating you, there's no security. Because as Tommy, a lot of us, we come from junior hockey. We're pretty mortgaged as hockey players, right? We don't have, I didn't have that post-secondary education until I retired from hockey. And that stress can add to a lot of the mental anxiety that players have today's game. It's tough enough to line up against McKinnon and McDavid without having someone, constantly giving it to you on the bench.
And it's changed now, right? The coaches aren't like that now, right?
I think for the most part it's changed. Right. I'm sure there are still some guys that push a lot of buttons. Right. Or maybe they have to, maybe when they're pushing buttons, they have to have answers or reasons why they're pushing buttons, because the kids ask questions. Whereas, when I played for Mike, I would have never asked him, why do you want me to do it like that? My son would turn around and he'd ask his coach, well, why are we doing it that way? Like, that's not how I picture the game. And they have to have answers for the young people, because that's how we raise our kids.
Yeah. I had Freddie Shearer as my first coach. Yeah. There was no talking at all with Freddie. It was nothing.
I loved Joe Watson. I loved going to the alumni events, because I remember what Joe said, and Freddie's famous quote, right? He says, fellas, I think it was, they were going to beat Boston and going in a game, whatever it was at the Spectrum. He, fellas, we win today, we walk together forever. And Joe goes, Jesus Christ, Freddie's really lost it now. What the frig is he talking about? And sure enough, it's his famous quote. And when together, we walk together forever.
That's funny. Man, he called myself, Eddie Hospodar, and Chris Katsopoulos in for a meeting that started my first year. We're all rookies. He says, okay, I'm not telling you to fight, but you're all 6'2", 215 pounds. You're not going to play the first 5 minutes of each period. You're not playing the last 5 minutes. But in each game, the last 5 minutes.
No, Tommy, I think you're selling yourself awfully short here, buddy, because I think you had a lot more skill than you're giving yourself credit for, and I think your stats show it.
Thank you. Yeah.
Do they though? Do they show it?
It is funny. Do you watch any old games that you played in?
Like, I do from time to time. The other day, my son sent me, I've sort of, now that my son plays in a Canadian market, I've taken X or Twitter completely off my phone.
Oh, good move.
It's just not worth it.
Yeah, no kidding.
But sent me a note the other day, and it was Ron Hextall scoring on I see Hexy here because he's down in Florida for much of the year. We have coffee once a month or so. And this Hexy scoring in Washington sort of picked up the puck.
Yeah.
Team shorthanded, and he just hummed it like over everybody. And it was a strike down in the other. And I said, well, you know why Hexy scored? Because your old man took a dumb penalty and was sitting in the penalty box. He pulled a goal late in the game, and he saved my bacon.
Oh, that's funny.
But yeah, what were we talking about? It's changed a lot.
You know, Jeff, on that note, I want to ask you, how did Jacob get so good being based in Florida, at least at the beginning?
Yeah. Well, it's funny. When he was five, sort of our first or second little in-house team we had, I had eight skaters. And we had a goalie by committee, so someone had to put the gear on. And it was at Incredible Ice, which is the Panthers' practice facility. And three of those boys are playing in the NHL today. Randall Duhame in Colorado, and Andrew Peak just got traded to Boston, and Jacob. I think and here we go, Tommy. We trade Doug Crossman my first year in Philly. Gordon Murphy, we trade Doug Crossman for Jay Wells. And he played with Wells. He's just a great guy. And
tough, too tough.
Ooh. Oh, tough. And he just loved the young guys, whatever. And so the day he arrived to Philly, Murph and I took him out for lunch. And I knew he wasn't happy leaving LA because I know how much he loved it there. But I remember sitting with him, and I'm 22. So I look at him, I say, there was one warm market, right? The LA Kings. I said, how did you ever play in LA? Like, and he looked at me like, stupid kid. You like playing in LA so much that you worked that much harder to stay there. And here's the part that got me, okay? Because years later, I raised my family in Florida. Inside every rink is 200 by 85. Doesn't matter if you're in Toronto, Kingston, Minnesota, or El Segundo, California. The inside of every rink is the same dimension. So I remember when I was coaching my little Florida Junior Panther teams and then later the Florida Everblades teams, and we'd be playing a team from Toronto or whoever, and they're giving it to the boys and go back to your palm trees. And I'd always remind them of that. Hey, guys, like, they don't have any parents that played in the NHL on their team. You guys have three.
That's right.
And the rink's the same size here as it is in Toronto. So I'd always remind them of that. But the skill thing, my son, he was young, and I played with Holly. Like I played with Blake. Yeah. I played with Larry Robinson. Am I right? And I played with Mark Howe, Paul Coffey, guys I really admired in the skill level. So I always taught the boys to love the puck. And down here we had Jay Bomeister playing on the Panthers here, and he was just a specimen.
Yeah.
Could skate like the wind. Or 15 goals one year. He sort of just became that shutdown guy. But I always tell the boys, watch Bo. He looked like a giraffe. His head's up. He's always surveying the ice, head on a swivel. So I just always stress the skill side because my stories keep adding up. But the one year where the boys were young and we're in a tournament in Chicago, and Jacob and I had lunch with Al MacInnis and his son Ryan, and Al's playing he's working for the Blues. And my boys are only 10 years old at the time. And Al said, you know what's missing in our game? Talk about the NHL is the defenseman who can handle the puck in the middle of the ice. Well, Al told me that light bulb, right? I'm going to teach these boys to love the puck. I'm never going to talk about a system. Anybody, when they hit 15, can teach a, you know, and also sort of time and space, right? Like angles and separate man from puck, whatever, but use the body. But anybody can teach someone to hit, fight, down and stuff. It's, to me, it's all skill, because if you're always making a simple, smart play, then you're never being creative and you're never doing. So I encourage them to make mistakes.
Well, that's good. That's good coaching by you. Good job. Because it's so easy. The coach wants to win the game, right? So he says, bang the puck off the boards, bang the puck off.
And I hear a lot of it.
Yeah. You're so right. Yeah. I read Bobby Orr's book years ago. And he would talk about that very play. He said, if I listened to a coach tell me to bank it off the boards every time, I would not have become Bobby Orr.
Not even close. He just
had the freedom to carry the puck. So that's fantastic, Bobby. Good job.
Yeah, thank you. Well, and you know what? I'm lucky. I mean, there was a two-year period where Jacob led the NHL in goals for defense. I mean, he had 30 in a two-year period. And it was, I think it was one more than Werenski and six more than Yossi had. And that they were both shortened seasons.
Right.
But I think it paid off. I still have the holes in my garage.
There you go. So how many years did you play in Philly?
I was their property for seven. I played three total there. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Then
got traded to Philly or to LA?
To LA, yeah.
For who did you trade for?
First time it was, I got traded for,
Steve Duchesne.
Yeah, and Steve Kasper.
Oh, really? Two for one?
So, no. Philly, remember Yari Curry went to Italy to play for a year?
Yeah.
Philly acquired Yari's rights and sent me and Yari to L.A. for Duchesne and Kasper.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'd love to say I got traded for Steve Duchesne and Steve Kasper.
Isn't that funny when you get traded, right? Your ego kicks in. You want to be.
Oh, yeah.
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 For me,
I remember they used to have these quarterback clubs in Ottawa. So I grew up a Canadian Football League fan. So they're in. And it was early May or whatever, and I came back home, and my dad had this. He looked white. He was sitting at the kitchen table like, what's going on, Dad? He says, we're traded. I said, what? What do you mean I was traded? He said, yeah, you're playing with the great one next year. What? You're going to L.A.? I said, come on. Really? So he was shocked. But
yeah. So it was during the offseason you got traded?
Yep. Yeah.
And so what was your thought, though? Did you love Philly and want to stay there? Or are you happy?
Loved it. You know, it was amazing. When I got traded, you know, Paul Holmgren was my coach. I would have put my head through the brick wall for him. Yeah. And then, so Homer called me. Russ Farrell was, so we had a new GM, right? And then, so Russ called. But then Ed Snyder called me. Jay Snyder called me, the owners. And then, so it was really, and really made me feel good about, I guess, how my time went there and maybe what I meant to the team, and that really sort of, I always felt like part of the family. Then going to LA, I mean, wow. I mean, it's showtime, right? We had Bruce, got our plane. We had Gretz and brought in Yari. And
was Larry Robinson was there at that point too?
Larry was there. You know, I'll never forget, like Larry was 40 that year.
Yeah.
Still a quick feet, didn't he, Tom?
Yeah. I love that guy. On and off the ice, I just admired him so much.
Him and Stitch had more fun than anybody going for it.
Yeah.
They drove from the valley together every day, and I feel like Dave Taylor. So they come in, and Larry couldn't stop laughing.
Yeah,
and he said, "I mean, this is 1991 or whatever, right?" So I guess they had to stop at the bank because Dave was getting a line of credit for something. Maybe he was building another house or whatever.
Yeah.
And Larry starts laughing because he says, "Oh, you get a loan." So, well, how much was it for? Oh, it was $950,000. And, you know, the time, Larry, excuse me.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
And Stitch, you know, he's like that little kid too, right? He's quiet. He's giggling all the time.
He's just 38. Oh, yeah. Always giggling.
Oh,
yeah.
I sat right beside him at the forum there. My chatter, man, I've got the big mouth going, and he's just giggling over here. It's like, when I became an agent, I represented Jim McKenzie. The real rumors with him is he's got the largest penis in the National Hockey League history. So we were shopping him around for the free agent. I called Stitch up. He was the GM at the time of the Kings. And I said, I've got to represent Jim McKenzie. He goes, oh. He tells a story about how he's in the locker room. Yeah, he says he's in the locker room one day, and he's bending over him, tying up the skates, and McKenzie walked by with no clothes on. He looked up and says, and that's Dave Taylor telling the story, and he's giggling away. Oh, he's a great guy. He's such a gentleman and everything.
Yeah.
Man, was he a nasty player, too.
Yeah.
Oh.
Nasty.
Yeah. That's right. Rogie was a GM, right?
Yeah.
Oh. So had you met Wayne before?
No. Oh. No, I played against him, obviously, for 3 years, but we don't play against him once a year.
Right.
So, yeah. So when I was 11, I was a school patrol, it's a crossing guard, right? Going to sixth grade or whatever. And as a reward, they took all of us to an Ottawa 67s game win. So I'm 11 and they're playing the Sioux Greyhounds, and it was, Gretz was 16, his first year in the league. Right. And like amazing. It would have been fun to see that show sort of in today's world with all the you know, the internet and everything. But every rink Gretz went into, he had to do, they did a shootout with the other team's best player. So it was Bobby Smith, who was running away with the Canadian Hockey League scoring, and Gretz. And I'll never forget it. They each took three shots, and it was so exciting for us to watch.
Sure.
So when I finally, when I finally became his teammate, I remember we were back in Ottawa, we're skating around. I was showing him, we're skating in the Ottawa Civic Center. I was like, Gretz, I was here that night. He said, oh my God, I was like getting threats. I was scared to do it. I was just a kid. But you know what a talent, right?
What a great person too, right? When you're playing with him, what a good
greatest, yeah. The greatest. Yeah. I see him here. He spends a lot of time in Florida, so I'll see him and Janet. They'll go be in the suite at times, and just same guy.
Yeah, I think. Well, he came first training camp. I was sitting at the back of the bus. There's cooler as usual back then. There's a cooler beer at the front, so he gets on the bus, grabs a six pack, and comes to the back. And I'm thinking, oh God, he's going to tell me I'm traded or something. I wasn't like that, but he just had that aura about him. So yeah, with me, and we played against each other. He was obviously younger, but he would play up, and we played against each other, Junior B. And he sat with me, and he knew all the guys I played with. I couldn't remember these guys. His memory, he told us.
Yeah. That's why I think he's so good on TNT. I think he's great. I love listening to him do his studio work.
Yeah, definitely. So how many years did you spend in L.A.?
I was just like parts of two. I was there till February. Right. Then I got traded to Pittsburgh.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, when to win the cup there. This is one of my Rogie stories, actually.
Okay.
How many years had Rogie been in? I was born in Montreal, so I want to apologize. And I grew up in Ottawa, so half my friends are Francophone, French-Canadian. So. Yeah. My dear. Anyway, so Rogie, I mean, he'd been in LA 30, 40 years, and he still probably sounded like he just got off the plane from Mariana. And so I'd lost my mom. February 1st, mom passed away, and Rogie had to call me in off the ice. And Timmy Waters was in the background working out, and they called Timmy in. And I just agreed to a contract the night before with Rogie, but he kind of told me off because I wasn't playing well. Now, if we'd agreed to it. So I had called my mom the night before she passed, didn't even realize, but anyway, and told, man, Rogie just called me off. I'm kind of mad at him, you know, like I'm gonna show them tomorrow. We got Chicago. I'm gonna beat somebody up tomorrow. So anyway, so right before the game, Rogie comes in and goes past and goes into Tommy Webster's office. So they call in Timmy Muddy from the back. He was working, I wasn't playing, and then they called in Gretz, and then they come out, and Rogie looks at me and he goes, Jeff, come here. And I turned to Blakey. I said, he's going to tell me off again. I can't believe it. We got to go play. Anyway, he had to deliver the news about my mom, which I really appreciate how he did it. It worked out really well. But my funny story was almost 3 weeks later, unfortunately, we're playing in Edmonton, and the phone rings. I can't remember who his roomer. We roomed with players back then too. Hey, Tommy, today's world, it was a Marriott league. Today's world, it's a Ritz five-star
game.
The guys off entry level by themselves. Anyway, I had a roommate. My phone rings at 7:30 in the morning in Edmonton. So we're at the hotel. I pick it up and I hear, hello, Jeff. It's Rogie. I'm like, yeah, I know it's you, Rogie. we have made a trade. And I could tell, because it was a three-way deal, but I could tell he's looking at his notes. We have made a trade and you're going to Pittsburgh, I think. trying to get all his notes straightened out. Oh, but that was pretty funny.
My favorite Rogie story, and people have met Rogie, he's a fantastic gentleman, but he's kind of quiet and really too. He's not a really great public speaker. He's not really comfortable at it. So first day of training camp, you go in, you'd have your physicals in the morning, then you come back for a meeting at night. So we were in Hull, Quebec for training camp.
On the Olympics then. Yeah.
That's right. We all went to the strip joint, and there's Larry Robinson, John Tonelli, Wayne Gretzky, all these veteran guys, star players, and everything. So we're sitting. We go into the private room. There's the camera and everything there. We take one of the girls' panties off and hanging up over the camera so nobody can see what's going on. And all the girls are in the room with us, and there's all these other guys sitting up in the big room, and there's no girls dancing with us. And we're drinking beers. And I remember Timmy Waters is my partner. I remember sitting there with Timmy, goes, we shouldn't be doing this. We're going to go back to a meeting at night. We both looked, we're with Wayne. So we sat there. We sat there. Go back to the meeting. Now, we've had a dozen beers, all of us, and we're all giggling, smelling like booze and everything. And Rogie gets up to try to have his big speech, and he's uncomfortable as it is, and we're giggling like little kids. It was totally unfair to him, but it was the funniest scene because we're just all like little kids. We shouldn't have been doing it, but we were stuck there. So poor Rogie was, but you know what? It was a veteran, guys. He was kind of, I think at the end, he came out, oh, forget it.
Right.
Cool. Yeah. So how long did you spend in Pittsburgh?
I got traded back to LA. So literally February. Unfortunately, you know, Tom, I wasn't playing good hockey, and I couldn't get in the lineup with Bowman. And so I got traded February. I got traded back to LA following November. I just wasn't playing there, and sort of couldn't get out of my own way. So I was excited. Went back to LA again, and that was the year they made the run to the finals in '93.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a good couple. Barry Melrose came in, and this kind of a magical year. Actually, they caught a little lightning in a bottle and made a good run.
So you had my first client, or one of my first clients, Warren Reichel.
Is that right? I didn't know you represented him.
Yeah, one of my first guys I had. He was in the minors, banging around for all place, and I just left LA, and I knew he was a tough guy. And I said to him, I said, "Listen, I hate to do this to you because it's the worst job in the world, but if you want to play in the LA Kings, you want to play in the NHL, you have to fight everybody that moves." And to his credit, I think he fought Marty in exhibition game or something. Yeah.
And he's gone on. He's had a great career in hockey in general.
Yeah.
Definitely. I mean, when Boogie bought the Windsor Spitfires and ran that great show there for at least a decade. And I see him a lot down here in Florida. He's in the press box quite often here scouting for Edmonton today. He had a lot of guys. Funny is right.
He thought he was John Travolta, right? Like, he just thought the women just loved him, right? Because he looked like John Travolta. He was definitely one of those guys. He's got
a full head of hair. I can't stand him.
Oh, yeah. Totally. Yeah. He looks like he gets stung by a bee, though. He's getting allergic to it.
He's swollen up.
Yeah, he's a little swollen.
All the swole, as they say.
Yes. definitely. So, did you say you won a cup in Pittsburgh?
Yeah.
Good job. I forgot what you want.
A good team. I mean, I sort of look at it like I just think our top five or six were better than everybody else that year. Right. Like, you know, Ron Francis was our number two center. Or you could argue maybe Yager was our number two center, depending on who he was playing with. Robbie Semario, Brian Trottier was our fourth center. So guys like Joey Mullen, Hall of Famer.
Kevin Stevens, too. He was there.
Artie was there.
Yeah,
Tockett was there.
Oh, yeah.
Tockett, Reggett, Shel Samuelson all sort of joined me there. They were all part of that three-way trade that Rogie was looking through his notes to try to figure out who was more. They all joined me there, which is great for me because they all came from Philly. Yeah. And so I had a lot of...
Shel Samuelson. We called... Remember Manu Bol, the big basketball player?
Yeah. So
in New York, we called Shel Samuelson Shel Bol.
Yeah. I remember when he came in. I remember we played an exhibition game and he wasn't sure what was going on, and he fought Boxcar. It might have been in that crazy brawl in Madison Square that night, actually.
Yeah, quite definitely. Didn't he have a pin? He had Eddie pinned against the boards for like 50
years. Yeah, I think so. And then Eddie thought he'd give him his welcome to league mold.
Yeah. We kept saying, don't let go. Do not.
Yeah. Wellesley, we talk about Wellesley. Manute Bol rented Wellesley's house when Wellesley left Philly to go to Buffalo. Manute was there, and he moved into Wellesley's house for a year. And I guess the funny part, Manute Bol, he wasn't much of a driver. Was he 7'6"?
Yeah.
So he kept driving in one of the garage and knocking the side view mirrors off the thing. So he never picked them up. He'd go to the dealership, get a new one, but they were all lying in the driveway, I guess.
Mm. So you're back to L.A., then you got to Florida after that?
Yeah, so I never played in Florida. I met Nancy was living down here. So, yeah, so I cleared waivers in L.A., and then I ended up playing, finished the year in Phoenix. But then I got traded to Edmonton and cleared waivers again and sort of finished. But then I signed a three-year deal in Hartford, another one-way deal. I was really lucky. Paul Unger was a GM there, and that's where I finished. I had a concussion in preseason, and they sort of decided – you were sort of talking. It's funny, you hear guys have one or two and they're not the same. I don't know, you're talking about, I remember documenting like almost, we did a workman's comp case in Connecticut, documenting almost 10 or 11 over a dozen year period. But remember those days? Cecilia Field later on, or we'll finish this Cecilia Field tomorrow morning, sort of. And it was important to get back on the horse.
Yeah.
I think maybe if they treated them back then, and, you know, when I'd have one, maybe take a week off and less thing, maybe I wouldn't have got, I started going out easy, sort of thing. So I had one fight in preseason with the Whalers and sort of got woozy, you know, and I think you just become more susceptible after a while. But I think if, you know, as time and studies have shown, if you let them chance to heal, sort of like a regular bruise, they probably healed better.
Yeah, isn't it funny? Because I don't think anybody ever pressured me if I got a concussion. I spent playing a playoff series against the Islanders, and Nystrom got me with a forearm shiver in the corner. Mm-hmm. And I finished the game and then collapsed in the locker room. I spent late in the hospital. But nobody ever pressured me. It's just you came out and you said, well, you don't have a broken bone or something like that, so just go play.
Yeah, exactly. And I never felt that pressure either because I don't think maybe the knowledge wasn't there. I know when I had my last one, Merrill Hodge and Troy Aikman had one sort of that same week.
Right.
But I don't feel Paul Holmgren and John Paddock ever put me out on the ice if they known things would have been dangerous. Well, in fact, I retired. Paul was my coach. He thought it was time to stop. And I know he would have never put me in a danger. I didn't do anything he wouldn't have done. That's why, and I've been fortunate. We, you know, my wife and I have never struggled to pay the mortgage or raise our kids. But that's part of the reason I never jumped on any of those concussion lawsuits, or because I never felt anybody. I felt there was assumable risk that I took as a professional and hockey player. I never thought anybody put me in a knowingly dangerous situation that I wasn't prepared to enter myself. So.
Like a guy like Paul Holmgren, if he had the knowledge that we have today of concussions, he would not have pushed you at all.
And he was in management when the protocols changed, and I'm sure he had no problem.
So you finished your career. Did you finish in 3 years there in your contract?
No, I just unfortunately I retired that first preseason, 28. So I wasn't ready to leave the game by any means, and I was really sort of looking to sort of rejuvenate my career. I had a good off season and sort of show that I was a solid NHLer again, and never quite got to finish that one. But
I was even trying up there. So how are you feeling now? Any CT issues or concerns?
So there was a period of time where every 3 or 4 years, through the NHL Alumni Association, I'd do a brain study in Toronto at the Baycrest Hospital. It was really interesting. So they do a number of neurological testing, they do a couple of MRIs, one where you're actually in the MRI, have the headset on, and you're actually on Microsoft Windows doing a bunch of testing while they study your brain. And I thought it was important for me to do for myself, but also my son's a hockey player, right? For the future generations, for their better. Haven't done it since, I guess, COVID broke out. So I'm assuming I'm probably going to get a call to go do it, as long as they're still doing it. And I thought it was important. I know there's some hospitals that, or some studies, but it's all been sort of post-mortem, the study of the brain at that point. I thought it was important to have something ongoing from a healthy brain. But no, fortunately, Tommy, I went to school full-time, got my business degree when I retired because I wanted to know I could do the work.
See, I think that's good for your brain too. Like learning like that, I've learned to learn more. Like you're exercising your brain just like you exercise your body, right? So if we do have, listen, we've all probably got some kind of damage to our brains because what we did. But I think you can really fight that off too by exercising your brain more. So
keeping it fresh, no doubt. I mean, listen, I read the sports page in USA Today for 12 years, and that was about it. Until we were at the Marriott Marquis in New York, the one day Dave Poulin. It's funny, he's assistant GM for my son's team now. He walked me in the hotel lobby and bought me a book. It was a Ken Follett book. He said, read this. So
really?
I always listen to Moose. I read the book and been a bit of a reader since, not a big one, but.
And what are you doing now? Tire guides? Is that your?
Yeah. So it's actually old family business. My wife's list technical data for the tire and automobile industry. So if you go into Canadian Tire or Cal Tire or Pep Boys in this country, for a long time, they were either using our book, which you flip through it, we list tire sizes, optional tire sizes, torque, technical data as a fitment guide for tires. Now we're an information company. We've since sort of transitioned. So Nancy asked me to come work for her in 2000. Someone had been working for them for a long time, had moved on. And So I moved in there, oh gosh, I don't know, 01, 02, and I didn't leave until last October. We decided we were taking a step back and allowing our employees to run the thing for us. So
very cool.
Yeah. So very now cool. I'm golfing a little more and working out a little more and doing a little bit of TV for the Panthers. And
yeah. Don't let the old man in. Keep fighting.
No. Well, Tommy, believe me, you're inspiring, buddy. I saw your video. You worked out really early in the morning, and I appreciated those things. You know, sort of get us out there.
Yeah. I've just learned so much. Like, you sound like you understand it, too. I think some people get caught in the trap that you're getting older, 65. You know, it's time to, you know, go golfing every day and sit around and do nothing. I think it's the opposite, right? The more you work out, your brain, your body. Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah. Everything follows.
Hey, listen, I'm really glad we finally got to meet. I think we've touched base on Facebook a couple of times, but we really never had a chance to talk. I really meant it. I really admired you as a player. You did what you had to do, but you always seemed like that good guy, too, that heard so many good things about you. So thank you very much for coming on the show. I'm glad you're doing well.
Thanks, Tommy. Great to see you, too, Tom. Nice to meet you.
Yep. Thanks for coming on, Jeff. Appreciate it.
Look forward to I'll exchange numbers there later, Tom.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dinner. Okay, bud.
Thanks, guys. See you.
Thanks, Jeff. So, hey, that was great. You got to talk to Jeff Trick and someone you played against but didn't really know.
Yeah. And I said to him on the show, too. I really meant it. Like, I always just viewed him. He was a tough guy, you know. Always fights and like that. But I just always viewed him as that good guy. That he's like a good team player. So he's admired that kind of player.
To take on those guys and not be considered a fighter, I mean, he took on, like I mentioned on the show, everybody. Yeah. Wendell Clark, Cam Neely, Probert and Koser. I mean, Ken Baumgartner. Like, he took on big boys, you know, right?
He seems like that intelligent, thoughtful guy, too, right? You know, watch him play.
And he's the dad of a son. I mean, for me, as a coach of young kids, I love what he said. He said he told his son, growing up in Florida, he said, the same size rink, and he said, just love the puck.
Yeah, that was cool. That's good coaching, right?
That's great coaching, because it supersedes everything else. Just go get it. Go get that puck. You know, want the puck. Know where the puck is.
You know, I've learned a lesson from that program, actually, the one we did with Jeff, because when I coached all the time, I wanted the guys to be more like me, bang the puck up the boards, you know. And I realized, man, I probably made a mistake with those. I mean, hopefully I helped them in some ways about doing their job properly, but that probably means, like, if I allowed them to carry the puck more. You know.
Well, you made a point, too, because you said, you know, you were just didn't want to make mistakes and you wanted to listen to your coach get the puck out, but you know, it's really important to have that creativity, but also to have players like yourself.
Yeah.
So you need, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of different ingredients to being successful, but this is what you had said. You said that coaches are just worried about winning.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you lose an 11, you know, you're 11 year olds, and if they lose a championship, who cares? If the job is to develop players, just let them develop, let them make those mistakes. Jeff had said that you seconded that.
Yeah.
Let them mess up.
You know, the funny thing too is, like, I'm with you. Like, to me, it's both. There's people ask the question, do you want to win and let everybody play? Well, I think you can do both. I think the goal at the end of the year is you want to try to win a championship, whatever that is, a state championship or whatever you're playing it. But you do that by developing each player on the team the most. If you're only going to develop 6 of the 12 kids on the team, then you only got half a team.
Absolutely.
Develop them all. Now you got a chance of winning. Everybody gets better.
Absolutely. You know, we said when we coached this year, we said, look, we're going to play everybody. But just the last 2 minutes, if it's a close game, let us put the players out there and the parents. Yeah. There was never any complaints about it because we played the kids. We just rolled the kids. And then if it was a close game, you know, you play the whoever you want the last 2 minutes. That was it.
You try to mix some of the guys in, you know, like you've got a top line that maybe puts like a third or fourth line guy up with the top line, all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good. That's very good coaching by Jeff. He's a thoughtful guy, man. He's cool.
And 3 kids out of Boca Raton went to the NHL. That's incredible.
Yeah,
you know, people always say, oh, you have to be in Canada. You have to be.
Yeah.
But you know what? The rink's the same size.
Well, you know, he touched on about playing in Los Angeles because at the time when I first got traded, there's only 21 teams in the league. And everybody said, you can't play hockey in Southern California. But he's right. I love New York and I hated leaving. But once I got to LA, I loved it there. I didn't want to go anywhere. It was, especially, you know, Gretzky gets traded there and it's.
Yep.
Warm sitting out in the hot tub Christmas Eve.
He had said, Jay Wells said it. He's like, it's a privilege to be in LA. You know, it's a privilege to get to play there and live there. So
it really is. Yeah. It's a great, it's a fantastic place to play. Again, especially now because now the team's more popular, the building's filled up. It wasn't like I hated LA, but I just love New York so much that now it took a while for me to really turn the corner on that.
That's yeah, but like you said, sitting in your hot tub on Christmas, you know, a cocktail, it gets nice. You know, no snow shovel anymore.
Well, I'll never forget that. I sit there going, "Oh, my goodness, you know, the stars are in the sky and all that kind of stuff." You're having your cocktail.
Yeah, you don't have to shovel the snow. You don't have to warm the car up. There's no frost on the windows.
I did it one point. I think I saw this with somebody else, but it was Christmas, and my ex-wife had a son from previous marriage, so my stepson. So I went to the Zamboni and I filled up the back of my pickup truck, Zamboni, the snow, and went and dumped it in our front driveway so we could have snow to play. Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome, man.
Yeah. I'd like to take credit for it. I saw it someplace else. That's pretty cool. So I went and did that.
That's really cool. And how long did it last?
Yeah, not long. I think it was about the next day. Yeah.
Real quick. Take your
picture. Yeah, go play right now.
Yeah. Oh, that's super cool, man. But he seemed like a real thoughtful guy, like you said. Yeah. You know, he was,
Very diplomatic, because I gave him a chance to rip in the Keenan and he
wouldn't do it. Wouldn't do it. Yeah, he's that generation. Like Mark Howe, when we had him on, he said he was taught that the coach is always right. Yeah, totally. And, when the coach is crazy, he's not right. But now it was also talking about the generations. Like now kids want to know, or not kids, but young adults want to know why are we doing this way? You know,
that is funny to hear that, because I remember Brooks, like I never asked him why we're doing
He wouldn't look at you. He'd be like, that's it. Go get your stuff off. But now
I did have some good conversations with Robbie Fattori, but we were teammates too, so there's a different relationship.
Different level of respect. I think it's just much more collaborative now, and you have to coach differently. Yeah. You have to, and I know we say the word holistic, but I think you have to like really look at the whole picture. There's mental health involved in it. There's, physical training. There's the emotional, well-being. So that's all part of it. Then there's the game.
Yeah. And win.
And you want to win. But only one team wins every year. 31 teams don't win,
Great show. Good job getting him too. You're on fire getting these guys on the show.
On fire, man. Let's go. Keep it rolling. If you like what you heard, please leave us a review on Apple. Those always help. You've left us great reviews, and we'd love to hear from you. So leave us a message, fullchangepodcast@gmail.com, and just let us know what you think. We'd love to hear it.
Let's have a magical day. All right, Grasshoppers. Thank you for listening. We had a fantastic show. We'll see you next time.